Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
We're rolling. Tuesday, November 18, 2025 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on @G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside executive producer of the show, Connor Dunning, on @C_Dunning929. Connor, how's it going, brother?
What's up, man?
Nothing much. Just trying to, you know, we have the Epstein list being voted on right now to be released. The House passed it through, yet all we're talking about is Lane Kiffin, I feel like. Is that a fair sort of lay of the land?
Well,
at this
we are
moment?
An ESPN radio station.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that makes sense for us.
Well, I'm not talking about. I'm just talking about the general southeastern part of the country.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I'm not talking about this station.
Football.
Not talking about sports.
Is a religion here, Gabe.
Yes. Seems to be more important than the Epstein files being released. But hey, we will discuss Lane Kiffin here in just a moment. Also, probably a little bit discussion. I heard Jason and John talking about it earlier, and we had our Board of Regents meeting here. 92.9 Board of Regents meeting about the future of Ryan Silverfield. And I do want to discuss that and sort of get down to the thought process you should have and the thought process that I think could be had by the people behind the scenes at this particular moment. As far as guests are concerned on the show today, we do have 2.5 hours to talk. We're going to pass you off to Grizzlies at Spurs. It'll be on NBC, but it'll be right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. No Ja, no Wimby, but we will pass you off at 6:30. And then Eric Hasseltine will be on the call at 7. NBC loses tonight. They flexed this game into this spot, too.
Do you know what game they flexed out?
No, not sure.
Detroit and Atlanta.
And Detroit is rolling.
And so is Atlanta.
Has Atlanta been?
Atlanta's
good.
They've been catching back up.
They started kind of rough.
I mean, they're 9-5.
Yeah, but 12-2, I believe.
Atlanta has won, I think, like 5 or 6 straight. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 straight.
Yeah, that was a bad business decision.
Not
when
good.
It was made a couple of weeks ago.
And Stephon Castle is also injured.
Good God. Jaren going to lift up the star power tonight? De'Aaron Fox?
I certainly hope so.
We'll see. But as far as guests are concerned, Jeff Calkins will join at 5 o'clock per normal, and then 6 o'clock per normal, Christian Fowler. And I you know how I feel about Ryan Silverfield and his employment and his future employment at the University of Memphis. I feel like it's a little too early to call a full coaching search at this moment, especially, and I'll elaborate on this a little bit later in the show, with the coaching carousel the way it is right this second. There is a lot of guys on the move, a lot of names being brought up, and there is more coaching openings than I can remember in my lifetime at this particular moment. And then, you know, Lane Kiffin leaves Ole Miss. Then somebody has to leave for Ole Miss. Then you have all the trickle-down effect of all those different things. So we will discuss. I'm going to ask those guys straight up how much thought should be given to this idea and sort of see what they have to say about it, both Jeff and Christian. Jeff at 5, Christian at 6. We'll have a trip around the NFL at 5:30. Monday Night Football, you have reviews for me? 33-16 final score by the Cowboys last night. Good offense, as they have been all year. Defense improved, though. And granted, they were playing the Raiders, so I don't know how much to really say about that. But Quinnen Williams was phenomenal. Phenomenal in his opening game there with the Dallas Cowboys. Had a sack, and he was great stuffing the run, which is what he does very well.
I would just like to thank Javonte Williams and George Pickens for what they're doing for my fantasy team.
Okay.
In our 9-2-9 league.
Okay. It's getting tough. It's, you know, we're getting here to the end. Me and Jason are fighting it out for a 1 seed.
Well,
although you're right there on our heels,
right,
nipping at the heels.
Have you seen the points for this year?
I took the slight lead, right?
No.
You're up.
By one.
By one?
A single point. The two of us are top of the league, though.
Yes,
the
you're
number
third,
one fantasy show.
You're third,
on 1990
ESPN. And I'm first because I have the tiebreaker over Jason, having beat him earlier.
And Jason beat me, and I think that's why I'm in third.
Yeah, so...
Gabe, does the head-to-head... Does it matter?
It does matter. It does matter in the 90s.
We got to let
league.
Miami know.
Yeah, speaking of which, CFP rankings released tonight. What do you expect? What,
chaos.
What are we looking for?
It's gonna. Everyone's going to be pissed
ACC,
off. Everybody's going to be upset.
What I find funny about this whole thing is the ACC, obviously, they've done their preeminent sort of strike on Notre Dame.
They did another post.
This week.
Another post.
And talking about how everybody around the country is wondering why Miami's not ranked over Notre Dame because they won head-to-head, yada, yada, yada. You know my take. They had a three-point win at home in the first game of the season, and Notre Dame has been rolling, and Miami has no one but themselves to blame. They lost two games in 3 weeks to unranked opponents. So that's how I feel. But at the same time, this is what I was thinking when I saw that second post before these rankings. The ACC and Notre Dame have like a working business relationship. This does not, it seems to me, with the business relationship, with the ACC scheduling alliance that they have, even though they're independent, it does not seem like something that should be above board. It does not seem like something the ACC should do, considering the relationship they have and will continue to have with Notre Dame. I don't know. I that's just sort of how I feel. And I do see a lot of Miami fans. Basically, obviously they have some good wins on their resume. They won head-to-head against Notre Dame. But they're trying to trivialize the win that Notre Dame had against a ranked Pitt team last year.
Yeah, they're saying that
When I look at the rest of Miami's schedule, the only game, the most important game on the rest of their schedule is Pitt. You can't trivialize Notre Dame's 22-point win over them and then also at the same time say, well, the most important game we have the rest of the season is a team they just beat by 22. Those two things can't exist at the same time. It's either Pitt's an important game, it's a resume builder, or it's not.
I think I am – I can listen to an argument for head-to-head. What I am getting – what I'm balking at a bit is when people try to apply it to unapplicable things. Like they say, well, the head-to-head for Miami and Notre Dame, that should matter. Of an argument just of that makes sense to me. Okay, I can
but
hear you.
But we add other things.
But it's when they try to be like, well, Pitt doesn't try. Well, okay, so that head-to-head doesn't count. Well, the Louisville game. Well, that doesn't count. Well, what about SMU? That doesn't count. It's like, well, so does head-to-head matter or does it not? Because if you want to say it matters, I'll listen to you.
God,
you beat Notre Dame. I understand that argument. But you can't try to say that, well,
you can't
that
wiggle your way
matters,
out of all your other issues.
But every other head-to-head doesn't matter.
Exactly. You can't wiggle your way out of all the issues
right.
that you have built for yourself by losing two games in 3 weeks to unranked
You're
opponents.
Either making an argument for head-to-head or you're not.
Yes,
you can't say, well, my head-to-head counts.
I feel like this week, considering Alabama lost, A&M had the struggle win over South Carolina, Texas, that conversation where they're going to be ranked is massive tonight because they were 10 last week. They get their brains beat in by Georgia, but we know that there's people out there in SEC circles, ESPN. You know, we have that conspiracy theory about, oh, well, the ESPN's in bed with the SEC from a business perspective, so they have it's their best interest to get Texas in. So where they're ranked, I think, is going to be a big, big conversation tonight. I think this is the week where you're going to see the most complaints and conversation around the college football playoff rankings, way more than the first two.
Do you think that Texas will be ranked ahead of or behind Miami?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, in reality,
they should
be behind.
They should be behind them.
If they're ahead, I'll have a problem with that.
Yeah.
But, like, I would say behind is what that's what should happen. But I don't know. I don't know. I do see Texas fans trying to make the case that, you know, this was a close 25-point loss. I've been
they showed moxie.
Yeah, and there was one guy who I believe covers Texas for a living for On3 or 247 or Inside Longhorns, whatever that is. And he was going through the game, and he was talking about the surprise onside. And this is what he wrote about it. Going for the onside kick was Kirby cementing the respect that he had for Texas. Fail and you give Texas prime position to get themselves back into the ballgame as opposed to making us drive down the field. He knew that Texas wasn't dead yet and could rise off the mat, twist and pull the dagger.
It's
and
the
you know what I you know
exact
what my
opposite.
Know what my response is to that? I can't think of a more disrespectful, I don't believe in you at all play than going for the surprise onside up 11. Because you're saying, I don't care if you get good field position.
Correct.
We're going to stop you. You ran for 23 rushing yards.
Correct.
We're going to hit you directly in the mouth. So it's funny to see Texas fans sort of twisting the conversation a little bit, trying to convolute it. I don't think it's going to work, but I don't think there's such thing as a good or close 25-point loss. I don't believe in that at all.
Hell of an attempt at a spin zone there. But it's actually the exact opposite of what that person wrote.
100%.
They did it because they have so little respect for you and your offensive ability that they did not care where you had the football. They knew they could they could stop you. And Kirby said, you know what? Let's go ahead and end this thing.
Let's just end this thing
right here.
Let's embarrass them.
Exactly.
That's what he was trying to do.
Did Matthew McConaughey write that?
I don't know. Maybe. He may have been a co-writer.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Lane Kiffin. Everyone's discussing it. Everyone's discussing it, including last night. Kim Mulkey, women's basketball coach at LSU, after a win on the road against Tulane. Here's what she said at the podium.
I see who's here. I know y'all back home trying to figure out if we're going to hire Lane Kiffin. We've got to get the first news. Hate to tell you, Lane was at Gainesville yesterday.
Oh, well, she sounds pretty convinced he's headed to Florida. He was at Gainesville yesterday. I believe that his family has taken trips to both places, though. So I don't know how much that means, although I will give you my take in just a moment. We have some updated drama. Here's the updated drama for you. Kawan Lacey, who ran for 200-plus yards against Florida, a couple touchdowns, was awesome in that game. He retweeted a tweet that read, "Too bad Lane Kiffin ruining all this team has worked for, but hey, this is the sip, so I understand. Congrats to Kewan Lacy." It was a tweet about Kewan Lacy. So he retweeted that. That's something that people have been paying attention to. And then, of course, in pure Lane Kiffin fashion, and like just could not be more on brand, he posted another book excerpt. And here's what it read. Bear with me, it's a bit long. "How do you know what to do next? You ask yourself honestly what your 90-year-old self would advise you to do, what they would have wished you had done. You ask yourself honestly what you've sensed from the beginning, what you have ignored, what you have quieted and distracted yourself from. You make two lists, the positives and the negatives, and you weigh them. And if there is one thing on the left that overpowers the dozen things on the right, then you trust that. You ask yourself what path will make you more of the person you are meant to be." That's what he posted today on social media. And he was also on the Pat McAfee show. I want your opinion real quick, Connor. Did you think it felt relatively scripted? And there are reports and conversations about it being a pre-recorded interview. It felt very scripted and kind of light.
It was a complete waste of everyone's time.
It was. But there was one, at least, conversation point within there that I think is worth discussing. Because we talked about the ultimatum yesterday that was being reported by On3, where Lane Kiffin has to give him an answer by the day of the Egg Bowl or he's not going to coach in the college football playoff, whether he's taking a job elsewhere or not. But Pat McAfee asked about the reports of the ultimatum from Ole Miss and from the powers that be in that athletic department. And Lane said the following: "There has been no ultimatum, and that's absolutely not true." Then he went on to do his normal, "We're having a blast and I love it here." Now, you can believe what you want to believe about the ultimatum and how that conversation was had behind the scenes, if it was had at all. But one thing I can tell you is, in turn, I think no doubt there's going to be some form of ultimatum in the sense that the calendar calls for it, right? This is from John Talty, who writes for CBS Sports. This is what he wrote. "There's also a very real timeline issues that would occur if Kiffin left for another program in January, with early signing period starting December 3rd and transfer portal window opening January 2nd. Ole Miss would be at a significant disadvantage if it lost Kiffin after, say, a quarterfinal or semifinal game in early January." So, like, in the end of the day, Ole Miss and the programs that are courting him need clarity by a certain date, by the time the transfer portal opens, so they can recruit and hit the ground running going into next year. This can't be something that perpetuates through the end of the year in a long run for Ole Miss, and then ultimately, say they make a run, get bow out in the semifinals, then he leaves. you're behind the eight ball. You're going to have a bunch of transfer portal recruits that leave and potentially follow Lane Kiffin, and now you don't have a coach that can hit the ground running in the portal and in recruiting to get the team ready for 2026. So, like, even if you're not blaming this on Lane Kiffin, what have you, this is a calendar problem. It may not be a full-on ultimatum, but there has to be decisions in a timely manner considering the way the college football calendar is set up right now. And you know, Connor and I talk about it all the time. We don't agree with the way the calendar is set up. Mm-hmm. It's just the way of the world as we live it right this second. Now, here's my take. I have some takes. All this seems to be way too much if he's going to stay put at Ole Miss. Because you're sort of running your fan base ragged. Now, in the end of the day, if he comes back to Ole Miss, most will be forgiven. Yeah, there's some trust you got to earn back. But Lane Kiffin has earned their trust already. There's a lot of good faith built up. But it does seem to be too much if he is staying put at Ole Miss. And I also think this. You'd have a contract extension, pen to paper, right now done at Ole Miss if he was staying. Kurt Cignetti did it. Multiple coaches around the country that are staying put that were involved in, you know, different coaching searches, they have signed contract extensions. It would have been done by now. But, and I know this is not much of a take, predicting Lane Kiffin moves is a futile exercise. No one has any idea what's going through Lane's brain at a given moment and what he holds dearly in this decision-making process. So you have to be careful about saying, oh, well, he's going. All the signs point to it. Well, he could potentially come back. And if you think that he's coming back, obviously all the signs point to him potentially leaving because the contract's not done and you have family members taking visits to Baton Rouge and Gainesville. I do think if he is going to leave, this is kind of bizarre, but it makes sense when you start to read the tea leaves. If he is going to leave, Florida makes more sense to me over LSU. LSU is the better job. I think it's probably the better landing spot, ultimately, for Lane Kiffin. But with the Steve Spurrier love, the ties he has to the state of Florida, coaching at Florida Atlantic, coaching, you know, at multiple stops in that state, I think that that's what makes sense for him. So if he's going to leave, I like Florida over LSU. Now, as far as what would happen if he does take another gig, I think Goldinger Judge would be coaching the program in the college football playoff for every single game, and they would conduct their coaching search from there. The idea of Lane Kiffin, as I sort of already mentioned, coaching this team through the college football playoff with this cloud hanging over top of the potential for him to leave and exit the program, I just don't think that's something that Ole Miss can afford to do. I don't think that's something that any program in the country can afford to do with the way the calendar's set up. So that's the update. That's how I feel. Here we are, again, talking about Lane Kiffin. If you're in the southeastern part of the country, this is a story, it feels like.
So why do you think, truly, he would go Florida over LSU when LSU is clearly the better job?
It's the familiarity he has with Gainesville in the state of Florida, and I think it's Steve Spurrier and the love that he always has talked about having for Steve Spurrier and the way he went about
it. So it's just ball. Those two reasons.
I think that's it, yes.
If and he also, was going to leave, none of us have any idea what he's going to do.
This is more about the interior part of the athletic departments, too, of each school.
That's LSU true. And there's Florida. More. There's a bit I more think, chaos going on at LSU.
I think LSU with the governors, you know, putting himself into that conversation and sort of making it about himself along the way, and the disruption they had and the brand new hires they have at AD and president, I think it's just kind of tough to hop into that situation and to think that you'd have the same free will that you have at Ole Miss. Florida has the same, some similar issues in the sense that Scott Strickland, very clearly on thin ice. There's some disruption there behind the scenes. He would not be the only cook in the kitchen, Lane Kiffin, that is, if he shows up at Florida. But I think it's a little more clear the role he would have within the Florida athletic department and the free will he'd have within the athletic department at Florida than it is at LSU. I think that's the institutional reason I think Florida over LSU at this moment.
And just to summarize, you are of the opinion the longer this goes on, the less likely it is he returns.
Yeah, but at the same time, I did leave that caveat in there. Are we really going to try to predict Lane Kiffin?
No.
I'm not going to do that. I'm just trying to give an outline for the way I'm thinking right now, but that has no bearing, and I have no understanding of the inner workings of Lane Kiffin's brain right now. It's all over the place. He's doing the same thing. But also, I brought up that earlier, that drama, the Kawan Lacy retweet, where he tweeted, "Too bad that Lane Kiffin's ruining all this team has worked for, but hey, this is the SIP, so I understand. Congrats to Kawan Lacy." He retweeted that. He was also on the Pat McAfee interview. Like, he made a little cameo in the background waving to the guys. So, like, I don't know how much you read into any of this.
Well, if the pre-recording was a real thing, that yeah. could have been, you know, that maybe
and
was.
And why was he in the office? Were they going over the game plan, or was Lane Kiffin trying to give him some clarity on what he's going to do next? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine.
Have you thought more about whether or not you believe he needs to tell his players? Well, just either way at this point. It seems like it is becoming a huge distraction.
I think at this point, listen, I brought it up yesterday. It's a tough decision, because if you tell your players now and they know you're leaving, you do run the risk of them being disengaged, frustrated, sad, all that. But if you don't tell them, you run the risk of that still happening and them being mad at you and pissed at you and spiting you, all those things. I think the best way to handle this, considering the way this has played out, is just to be completely honest with your players. Now, I don't know what being completely honest means for him right now, because I think with all this, it's pretty clear he hasn't made a decision one way or the other. So the way he can handle it within a locker room, the way he can handle it within a team meeting, is saying, guys, I'm giving thought to these other jobs. I'm trying to decide what's best for me and my family. But I just want to be clear with you. I am entertaining this. Like, that, at the very least, that needs to be done. And it may have already been done behind the scenes. I'm not sure. But it does not necessarily seem that way with the Kawan Lacy repost and all these different things we're hearing about the inner workings of the program.
Would it be a mistake for him to leave?
Tough to tell right now. I think he's got it great at Ole Miss. It feels like a situation where, like, you have free will. You're turning yourself into a pseudo statue coach at that place. You've shown that you can win at the highest level. You've shown that you can compete for a national title. Like, you're in that conversation. I mean, ultimately, I, from where I sit, would say it's a mistake. But that has nothing to do with what he internally thinks about what's best for his family, what's best for his future, where he thinks it's easier to recruit and win from. You know, I personally think with what he's done at Ole Miss, it's like your legacy can be built there, and you can stay there, and you can live out the rest of your career there, which I feel like is what coaches ultimately want.
Right.
But also, if he leaves for Florida, he could do the same thing there. Now, granted, they have a bigger history, a little more clouded, legacy is a little bit diluted, but he could probably do the same things there and replicate what he's done at Ole Miss. I personally think staying at Ole Miss would be in his best interest, but ultimately, Lane Kiffin, what do you hold dear? How are you making this decision? Who are you making this decision for?
I tend to agree with you. It's just, if he goes to Florida, he's doing it for a few reasons. One, more money. It's as simple as that.
Yep.
Lane Kiffin, money speaks to Lane Kiffin. It's spoken from a Tennessee fan about the U.S. Money speaks to Lane Kiffin, and it speaks to all of us. So I'm not saying that's some great sin upon him. He would make more money. He's going to make more money if he stays, but he'll make more money if he goes.
That's something I debate, because I feel like Ole Miss, LSU, and Florida would pay him the same amount in all likelihood as the head coach. Ole Miss is going to do whatever they can from a contract standpoint to keep him. So, like, if Florida offered him $16 million, they would match $16
million.
They'd find a way.
Yeah. But it is guaranteed if you go to Florida, you're going to make more money than you're making right now. So I'm just saying, that is one of the reasons. If you go, it is going to be to make more money. It is the regional advantage you would have with recruiting in Florida. That's a real thing.
Yeah.
Like you said, he has familiarity with Florida already. And I think there is still a perception, whether it is right or wrong, that the long-term success is more viable at Florida than it is at Ole Miss. Again, I don't know if that's right or wrong.
Right.
But that is still, in some people's mind, why you would pick Florida over Ole Miss, even though you can make an argument
that
with what Ole Miss has done, because they've done a tremendous job of raising money, giving him resources. They have built that football program into something that it has never really been before. And that is why we think Lane Kiffin should probably stay at Ole Miss.
Here's the fun catch to that longevity conversation you're having, though. Patience and expectations lower at Ole Miss.
Yes.
So inevitably, if you had a couple of lean years, you're fired at Florida. You have a couple of lean years at Ole Miss, you've done so much good.
Well, and that's
they're always
thing
going to put up with it and would, give you another year, and the fans are going to be on your side, that type of
you
thing.
You would have to restart at Florida.
Yeah.
You're already at the top of the mountain right now at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Now, does Lane perceive it as, I've hit my ceiling at Ole Miss? Can we go any higher than this? Does he think that the ceiling at Florida, even though you have to restart a bit, is higher than Ole Miss? Because, like I said, it is unfair to Ole Miss. I'm not saying that this is agreeable across all things. But Florida, I do think, has shown that they have proven that they can give long-term resources and long-term success to a coach that builds a program there. If he wins football games, the money will be there, the players will be there. Ole Miss has had great success with Lane Kiffin. Great success, but it's been short-term. So is he looking at it and saying, this short-term success at Ole Miss is not viable like long-term success is at Florida? And then you add in money, recruiting, resources.
And here's the thing, from the outside looking in, I don't see why not. Why long-term success at Florida would be more viable than Ole Miss, but maybe he has an inside
track. I'm not saying that is what it seems to be on paper, even though I think that Ole Miss has done a tremendous job and deserves more credit. And it feels like they're not getting enough credit
and if Lane
in the
leaves,
conversations
I think
about
that's
Lane.
Now a very attractive job, way more attractive than when he took over.
See, now that's an interesting conversation. If
because
Lane
then you're following
leaves,
the guy, is that the idea that you're going to go with?
Well,
I guess.
Will those giving the resources right now to Lane, they'll have to hit that higher for them to continue it.
Yes, you have to generate excitement.
Right.
You have to find a name that's at least comparable. Not necessarily
because those
one
resources
for one.
Started coming once Lane showed he was the guy.
Yes,
it didn't come before he showed he
but
was
Lane
the guy.
But Lane did show it. Now they see it. They see what it can be. What can be built if they dig into their pockets and hand some money out. I mean, you can't go and hire Bobby Petrino. I understand that.
No.
But if you find a John Sumrall, if that's how that ended up, I think that you would be able to create the same amount of excitement and generate the same amount of money.
Maybe.
Similar amount of money.
Maybe. I don't think the same amount of money.
It's Lane Kiffin, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, this is
well, the thing that if you're Ole Miss,
this is the name in college football at the moment. I understand
the thing
that
you
part.
Should be worried about is him taking your players.
Yeah. Of course. But that's, I think you also have to, in the end of the day, accept that's inevitable. That's an inevitability. He's recruited these guys. They want to play for him. Wherever he goes, they'll follow. I think that's with every coaching switch or, you know, coach leaving a program. Yeah, you have to focus on trying to win that recruiting battle at that point, and that becomes a tough thing for whoever's the next coach. But I think you do have to resign yourself to the fact that if Lane Kiffin leaves, he's going to take some players with him.
Yes.
For sure. All right, now, since we're on the coaching conversation, I heard Jason and John discussing, it's a big conversation within the city right now, about Ryan Silverfield and his future. I want to do some fact and fiction and sort of get to the bottom of the situation right now at the University of Memphis. We'll talk Ryan Silverfield when we return right here on 92.9.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Memphis football, two-game losing streak. Has not looked that great last couple of weeks. Frustrating loss last week on the road against ECU. And today, on Jason and John, they discussed it and then brought me into it, brought a discussion up about me, and then we had our nice 92.9 Board of Regents meeting after their show while I was awaiting to go into my pre-show meeting with Connor. And with some of the guests. And I understand this is a big topic of discussion, and I think it's a very polarizing topic of discussion. There's two sides of the fence, obviously. One is saying, move on, move into the future. You have to win the conference. Hasn't done it in 6 years. Ryan Silverfield hasn't. And that's a problem. You have more resources than you ever had under the two coaches that won the conference before him, his predecessors, in Fuente and Norvell. And it's just not what it needs to be at the moment. You have the other side saying, well, you know, in the end of the day, this is a 50-23 coach, 29-8 in the last 3 years, 24-6 in his last 30 games. He's improved year after year after year. Yeah, a little bit of a step back this year from a record perspective, but he had to replace 78 new guys. He's learning the way of the land. He was a first-time head coach. Now, I completely understand people's frustration. I share the frustration. I came in here yesterday. I discussed it. It's good. It ain't good enough. Good enough is getting to a conference championship, at least being in the game, and winning one after a certain amount of time, a five-year period, three-year period, whatever your assumption is about how long it should take for Memphis to be back at the top of the conference. I understand why people have their frustrations and want to see a new a change in leadership, but I'll take you behind my thinking. I talked about your thinking, and I understand it, but here's my thinking. One, he's done a good job for the most part. It's not good enough, but he's done a good job. He's won 11 games, 10 games, and a potential for 9 or 10 wins this year. If you want to say if he gets blown out by Navy and blown out in a bowl game, we can revisit this conversation. I'll hear that. But he's done a good job. Historically at Memphis, you don't fire 8-4 head coaches. You don't fire 9-3 head coaches. You don't fire 10-win or 11-win head coaches. You don't fire coaches that have gone 50-23. You don't fire coaches who have over a three-year period are 29-8. That's just historically what we have come to know about the University of Memphis football program. Also, what I would tell to people, and this is my line of sight, my vision, when I look at his 6 years, he came in as a first-time head coach. There's always going to be a learning curve there. We saw it with Penny Hardaway. We've seen it with multiple first-time head coaches. And the first 3 years was ugly. He was 8-3 with the leftovers from Mike Norvell's time and then went 6-6 two straight years. That was ugly. It was ugly. But at the same time, and I'm not – Ryan wouldn't use these as excuses, but I'm going to contextualize it. First-time head coach, COVID, immediately, transfer portal, NIL, all at the same time. So he gets out of those two lean years, sort of learns the way of the land, learning on the job, and then he follows that up with a 10-win season, an 11-win season, and whatever we're going to see now. And I think the stat that a lot of people use to say you need to get rid of him right now is he doesn't necessarily beat teams over 500, beat good teams on the schedule. So far, through his 6 years, he is 12-19. Against teams above 500. Horrible mark, not a mark that I sign off on by any stretch of the imagination. That's bad. That's bad. But when you look at it and contextualize it, a lot of those losses came in the first 3 years. He was 5-12 against teams above 500 in the first 3 years. Since then, he's been 7-7, right about even. That's still not good enough, but it has improved over the years as we have gone down this path. And then I think when you really get down to making a move right now or not, this is what I would warn against. One, it could always be worse. We know that. But two, have you seen the coaching carousel and how many open jobs there are right now? If you were to make a move, if you were to move off a coach that has been generally good at the University of Memphis and Ryan Silverfield, what options are going to be out there in this particular coaching carousel? I know that one side would say, the side that wants him gone, would say, hey, this is a great job, a lot of resources, there's going to be people lining up at the door. But I also know that there are a lot of guys out there that Memphis could have their eye on where you'd have more competition than you would have going into the future. There are 12, 13, potentially more than that, open jobs in America at this moment. The competition in this particular cycle is vast. So, took you through my line of thinking, where I'm at this moment. I understand both sides. I get the line of thinking. But at the same time, it just does not seem like that dire of a point to be making a move like that, making that drastic of a decision at the University of Memphis.
It's tough, man. I think that both sides have a good case. And the first thing I'll say is, if he ends the season on a 4-game losing streak, peace, bye. It's time to change. You absolutely have to change, even if you lose the Navy. I do think the conversations need to be had, because at some point it becomes insanity. Every year going, well, this year, man, they won like 9 games. They won 10 games. That's a good season. But we have gotten to the point at Memphis where we have got to expect better than good. You have the most resources in the conference. You have the most talent in the conference. Make it to your conference championship game. We're not even asking you to win it. Just make it to the game. And my opinion is, if you don't fire him this offseason or this year, if he doesn't make that game next year, bye. It has to be at some point. You make it to that game, enough, or you get fired.
Listen, Connor, I agree. Enough is eventually enough. Like, now, at some point,
I think
you have to do what you're expected to do. You have to get over that hump. You have to be good enough instead of just being good.
What's tricky about firing him right now is the biggest point that you made. You're not the number one destination right now in terms of the coaching carousel.
There's a lot of open jobs.
There's a lot of open jobs ahead of you. Now, there are a few interesting names that you have, I think, an inroad with that may be able to help you out here. Stein being one of them. I still think Odom, you make that phone call, see what's up there.
Yeah.
Those are interesting calls you can make. They'll pick up the phone. They'll listen to you. But now, again, though, if the best argument for Ryan Silverfield, though, is like not firing him because of other schools looking for coaches right now, that's not a very good argument for your coach.
Well, but also, listen, don't you want to be pragmatic in your thinking when you're talking about making a big decision like this?
I think where I am in terms of Ryan Silverfield is, this is a failure of a season. No matter what happens here, it's a failure of a season. You're not making it to your conference championship game. You're missing out on the college football playoff. Feels like a wasted season in a lot of ways. You had a lot of opportunity, and you threw it away with a loss at UAB when they had an interim coach. You threw it away with the loss at Tulane. That's okay. That's one loss that I would have given you, and then you just completely crapped the bed again against East Carolina. What's concerning is that all three of these games, it was about late-game execution.
Yes, absolutely.
And that is preparation and coaching. And that goes at the feet of Ryan Silverfield and his staff.
No doubt.
If you lose the rest of this year,
it's frustrating beyond belief.
But if you don't lose, but if you beat Navy and you win your bowl game, I understand keeping him for this year. But I'm at the point where if you don't make this game next year and if you don't dominate this conference next year, bye. Because we need a coach who can.
Yes.
Memphis needs a coach who can.
At the end of the day, where we Memphis sit
wants,
right now.
But if Memphis wants to get
sure.
to where they want to go, mediocrity in the American is not going to get it done.
100%. I do want to discuss, though, where we're at this current moment. We're not climbing into Ed Scott's head. We don't know what he thinks, but I do think it
does
matter.
I don't think
matter.
He's going to fire Ryan.
Here's what I do think. He is not the guy who hired Ryan. So, like, therein lies a problem for Ryan in the sense that this is not a handpicked guy by Ed Scott. So, if Ed Scott ultimately talks with the people behind the scenes, and they decide, hey, enough's enough. We have to move on. We have to go get to another conference title game right now. Then a decision could be made. So I don't know about that. I don't know what Ed Scott's thinking right now. And I would imagine he's not thinking of firing him. And if you're being pragmatic about the situation, you look at the coaching carousel this offseason, You look at the results he has delivered. You look at 78 new players rebuilding the roster this year and still having pretty solid results. And you say, yes, he's going to be our coach going forward. But that does not guarantee future employment beyond next year. That's where I think we're at the current moment. And yeah. I think that's fair, and I think that's the right way of thinking. But I do understand people's frustrations in wanting to have more right now. I get it. But I don't think it's the best time in the world to go make that decision and hope for the best going into next season with a new coach.
I think my concern is, it says a lot, though, not firing your coach is just because you're like, well, it might be hard for us to find another coach.
And I don't think that's the only reason, but
let's say that right now, you know, let's say that Arkansas had a coach. We know that John Sumrall was staying. Tulane's not. Like, if we knew that some of these guys were where they were, and Memphis was the only job really available right now, then you fire them.
And can we? This is the other thing. No one likes hearing this, but I'm telling you truth, and I'm telling you, as someone that should be trusted on this matter. Okay, the people behind the scenes that ultimately make decisions alongside the athletic director Ed Scott, they're happy with what Ryan has been able to do with this program. It's clean.
Right, right.
It functions very well. It's behind the scenes.
It's drama-free for the most part.
Yeah. It's very organized. And, you know, in the end of the day, they do more winning than losing. So that's right. Where I do tell people, I know you don't want to hear that. Like, I know that people within this part of the country, they would take an NCAA investigation to go win at the highest levels, to win a championship, to be a championship program. I understand that. So they don't want to hear, oh, it's a cleanly run program, it's organized, blah, blah, blah. But you know who that matters to? The people that make the decisions, people that give the money, the people that donate.
That's it right there. And that is why, ultimately, where I think everything lands right now, given he beats Navy and wins a bowl game, I do think those two things matter.
Yes.
Those absolutely matter.
You have to finish this. You cannot. And historically, his teams have not rolled over and died, but this is 78 new players who are not from necessarily all from the best programs in the country. So we don't know necessarily that past results of teams not quitting are going to hold this year, because the teams that didn't quit the last 2 years after being knocked out of the American Conference Championship race and the CFP race, that was 3-year, 4-year guys. That was Seth Hennigan. That was the whole wide receiver core. That was an offensive line that had, you know, nearly 100 starts combined. Like, there's no guarantee that you're going to get that crazy effort out of this team as you did the last 2 years.
So let's say, for the sake of the argument, he wins out the rest of the season. They beat Navy. They win a bowl game. I think ultimately where we are, Ed Scott and those who give money to this program want to see one more year. And if he doesn't make it to a bowl game next year, or not a bowl game, if he doesn't make it to a conference, if they won't get a bowl game next year, good Lord. If he doesn't make it to a conference championship game next year, or he starts the season slow, he gets fired. I kind of think that's where we're at. It's not yet, but this is the closest I think we've ever been to him getting fired.
It is so funny, though, too. Just looking at the national reaction to the way that fans feel in Memphis about Ryan. Because I think nationally, you look at 24-6 in the last 30 games, you see 10 wins and 11 wins, and they're like, what the hell do you have a problem with? It almost feels, it's not a perfect one-for-one, but this is how it feels to me a little bit. It feels kind of like when Taylor Jenkins got fired by the Grizzlies, where you had the rest of the NBA and
maybe
all the media saying, like, what the hell do you have? He built that team up. He's done a good job. They have 48 wins. They're approaching 50. How could you make this decision with 9 games to go in the rest of the season? But, you know, and maybe that hasn't aged all that well, although it's probably something that still needed to be done. But, like, the view and the understanding from watching the team and seeing how it has operated week after week, when you watch it here and see it constantly, it's a different feeling than what people see when they just look at paper, when they look at the record and they look at
the resume. National, they're looking at paper and they're not seeing that those losses are East Carolina, UAB, UTSA, teams that you should be beating.
Right.
They're not seeing those. And we can also just, I think it's fair to be honest about this. Ryan has some good wins. great wins. Like, USF, but great win.
Bad losses.
Bad losses. But Arkansas has aged poorly. That Florida State win aged like milk in the sun.
Yeah.
And
it's still Power 4 win.
Right? Yeah, you know? Sure. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, still
all right. But it's just I am very frustrated with Memphis football right now because they should be better. They should be better. There is no reason for them to not be in a conference championship game this year. It's just the similarity with the Jenkins thing to me is Jenkins lost the locker room completely. I don't think Ryan's lost the locker room. He hasn't lost faith of those in charge yet. It still appears that the boosters still want to get money. Ed Scott is still by him for the time being.
But there was a build to the Taylor Jenkins firing as well.
The similarity is, if you fire Ryan, you have to make the right hire.
Yes.
Because the Grizzlies seemingly have not made the right hire.
You're correct.
Now, there's been some revisionist history about why the Grizzlies didn't make that right hire. For the biggest one is the Mike Malone thing. Mike Malone didn't want to be here, and the Grizzlies players didn't want Mike Malone. We all know that to be true. Let's stop acting like it wasn't. The Grizzlies players picked Isolo. They should have done a search, but the players wanted him. Correct. I get that they're frustrated with him now, but they wanted him. If Memphis fires Ryan Silverfield, they better hit. Because Memphis isn't in a position to miss for a couple
years. Or even a season.
Because you have USF
on the heels. You have Boise State on the same playing field as you.
Tulane.
You have Tulane, who is, I mean, at least in football, surpassed you for the time being.
Yes.
And now John Sumrall may be off. They may have to make another hire. That could put them
into
flux to a certain
Navy's
extent.
Navy's just always – I know that – I get it. I get Navy situations, but they're always there. You can't mess around in the group, especially when you're trying to make it to a power conference.
Absolutely.
So if you're fire Ryan, you better hit. And right now, I don't know if they'll hit because of the other jobs available. But again, that's not a great argument to keep your coach.
But it's not a bad one either. It's pragmatic. I guess what I'm saying,
it doesn't inspire a ton of confidence in your coach when you're like, one of the main reasons I'm not firing him is I can't guarantee that they're going to get a good candidate.
But you have to think about this in a sane way.
A year from now, though, maybe they will.
You have to think about this in a future-oriented way. And if there are things that make you hesitant about the future and moving on from a coach that has been pretty good, if there are things that may get in the way of making the perfect hire and landing the next hire, you have to think about it pragmatically and you have to make the decision that lines up with that. And I think right now it's keeping Ryan. And there's no real question behind the scenes that that's going to happen unless, as we have already mentioned, it's an ass-kicking by Navy and an ass-kicking in the bowl game.
If that happens, you're gone.
Then you have to really sit down and decide, hey, do we feel good going into next year? If we don't, then you may have to make your decision.
There's an ultimatum next season if he's still the coach. Make it to the conference championship game and you're gone. Simple as that. It's as simple as that. And I also understand people are frustrated with, like, the extension bonus. Like, I get it. I get the frustrations.
Yeah, the extension bonus. I mean, I get it. You get, like, an extra year for winning 9 games and an extra 2 years one time if you win 10. But the money is not that. It's like a $100,000 raise and a $250,000.
Is Stein the first call?
If we get to that point, sure. I don't know if he would come to Memphis.
See,
he's probably going to be very wanted going forward.
Well, then do you make the argument you get ahead of it?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Oh, God. I mean, it's it's not a perfect situation, but I will say this. I don't think there's any real thought from the powers that be at the University of Memphis right now to move on from Ryan Silverfield. And I think that's sort of end-all, be-all. That's the discussion that's not happening behind the scenes. That we need to – the people that want to move on right now, you have to come to terms with that, in my opinion.
It's the closest they've ever been without being there yet.
Yes. Sure. That's fair. That's fair, but let's watch these last two games. I know that fans will not see the importance from a week-to-week perspective of these next two games, but when we're talking about program stability, these next two games are, in my opinion, about as important as it gets for Ryan Silverfield and his current
status. Is he Willie Green status?
You got to be careful.
Are you Willie Green status?
I don't know if I'd say that. You have to beat the Blazers to keep your job.
If he loses to Navy at
home. It's happened. And Navy's a good team.
You lose to Navy at home, three straight losses.
If you have four straight losses in the year, like that's not.
It's unacceptable.
You can't, it's not an acceptable outcome.
No.
Let's go ahead and grab a break on that note.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.